She was an advisor, and I did an interview with her recently. She said, yeah, we discussed this forever, and we talked about issuing gold-backed treasuries in the previous administration. He's going to do it this time, she says, because who wants to hold our treasuries of any duration? Who wants to hold our treasuries when we've inflated them, we've weaponized them, when gold has doubled the performance of the 10-year treasury for 25 years without counterparty risk? Who wants to hold our treasury? So Trump and I discussed issuing 50-year treasuries pegged to gold. Part of me feels that all this gold coming back is for this reason, right? That they need to have enough gold.
What's going on, Andy Schechtman? Miles Franklin, how are you, my friend?
Andy? I'm doing well, brother. I never have a hard time remembering your name. Names are tough with me sometimes. Talk to so many people, but I know that you're one of the good guys, man, and it's good to be back here with you. Thanks for having me, brother.
It's great to have you. There's really, as of right now, there's nobody else I'd want to talk to than you. Been thinking a lot about you. The only reason is you got such a great pulse on what's going on in the world. There's a lot of stuff happening, and it's happening so fast. I wanted to see really, what's your opinion in the gold markets world, in the markets in general, and let's start with gold, really since the inauguration or the new year, things are going like this. Go ahead.
So I'll say it this way, Andy. There's a lot to talk about over the next few minutes, and I'll say that I'm not exactly sure what the end game is, but whatever it is seems, in my mind, heavily focused on American interests. I don't think it's the Trump tariffs. I think it's much deeper than that. So I guess I'll just kind of take you through my thought process. There are a few squirrels running around in my head, so hopefully I'm able to put some coherent thoughts together. But what I'll say is that, look, first and foremost, as I've mentioned on your show before, gold in 2019 was reclassified as the world's only other tier one reserve asset. And this is the primary reason the central banks have been buying it at the level they have for several years. They front ran that decision in 2017. They also front ran repatriation in 2017. The Bundesbank from Germany, the Bank of Austria, Hungary, Turkey, Poland, the Czech National Bank, Dutch National Bank. Back then, they all repatriated their gold in 2017 from the Bank of England, which gave direct access, not all of it, but most of their gold, these countries, from the Bank of England, which always gave direct access to the LBMA, and from the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, which gave direct access to COMEX. So that was very unusual, right? Because up to 2017, we were seeing banks sell precious metals, sell gold in favor of interest-bearing instruments like U.S. Treasuries. In 2018, those same banks bought more gold as a group than they did in the previous 60 years combined. Very intriguing, to say the least. And then in 2019, those numbers doubled. So they went from net sellers to massive net buyers in 2 years and taking the unorthodox step of repatriating their gold. And then the BIS in 2019, the Bank of International Settlements, the most powerful bank in the world, known as the central bank or central bank, just coincidentally, reclassified gold as the world's only other tier one asset. Now, obviously, it wasn't coincidental. This is a big boys club. And if you're in the club, you know. And they front ran what was coming. Part of the Basel III regulations, which fast forward to today, some people think are playing into what's going on here. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But from that point forward, I was hyper-focused on gold acquisition by the central banks, the formation of BRICS and the de-dollarization. And one of the things that I noticed in 2020 was a group of reportables on the Commitment of Traders report. Now, the Commitment of Traders report is a report that the COMEX, the commodity exchange, publishes every week, and it shows just the positioning of the largest traders in the marketplace. Typically, it was just two groups of traders, the specs, which are the hedge funds on one end, and the commercials, JP, Goldman, Citi, et cetera, on the other end. One would go long, the other would go short. If the hedge funds went long, the commercials would go short, and vice versa. The contracts that are issued typically do not stand for delivery. Typically, they're used to offset risk. If I have 1,000 of these in my warehouse, let's say I have 5,000 of these gold eagles in my warehouse, I don't want to speculate that the price of gold doesn't eviscerate my ability to not only make a profit, but even potentially put me out of business by market fluctuations. So if I have 5,000 gold eagles in my warehouse, I will sell 5,000 ounces of gold on COMEX. So that as one goes up, the other goes down, as one goes down, the other goes up, commensurate, allowing my inventory to be hedged or market neutral. That's how you run a business. You don't do that with your inventory. You never get ahead, or your personal holdings, personal inventory. But that's what you do with a inventory of product that you're selling as part of a business, so as to not risk your business to speculation. That's really what the exchange was founded for. I mean, farmers who plant a field in April don't want to risk the whole growing season, so they forward sell their production maybe to a baker. The farmer who's farming a field of wheat can forward sell his production through the exchange to another party. Maybe it's a baker who needs the flour guaranteed in September. Excuse me, battling a cold I got skiing in Aspen. To guarantee that he has the ability to make bread, you know, next year. So it's the balancing of risk and return. It's offsetting risk to run a business. That's really what the COMEX was designed for. But there is, or in the case of the hedge funds, maybe to speculate, right? To speculate on the future price movements of gold or oil or silver, any commodity you can think of. So there is the ability to stand for delivery, which no one really ever did. I mean, less than 1% my whole career stood for delivery. And in 2020, we see the rise of this group called the Others. The Others are largely to believe to be sovereign wealth funds, primarily family offices, very wealthy, sophisticated players who are able then, through a great deal of anonymity, through something called the Globex market, which gives access to COMEX, could stand for delivery. These Others showed up on the Commitment of Traders report as a third group of reportables because they were large enough. And they started standing for delivery. And I started talking about it, you know, voraciously in 2020 because this was an anomaly in the respect of anything I'd ever seen before. Certainly they have not gone away, but the common thread in all of this is that since 2020, we've seen a very slow, methodical, yet concerted effort by very sophisticated traders ranging from hedge funds, commercial banks, sovereign wealth funds, and even central banks standing for delivery. And we've seen a slow bleed down of the COMEX market, all of it going from west to east. We've seen a slow bleed down of the London bullion market going from west to east. And everyone talked about all this metal moving, you know, to China, to Russia, to India, Saudi Arabia, to the BRICS countries, moving away from the West through de-dollarization. Of course, the weaponization of the treasury market aided that de-dollarization and in fact, supercharged it, et cetera. All of this has been well documented, right? And that's stuff that I've talked about now for, 4 years plus, going on five. So since November of last year, some really crazy things have begun to happen. The United States, I've been doing this 35 years, and I don't remember a time where the United States has not been a net exporter of gold. And so, you know, that was always the mantra. The West is selling all of its gold to the East and might not ever come back, right? Since November, the United States has become a net importer of gold. Now, you know, what happened in November? Trump won the election. Back in 2017, all those central banks were given the inside scoop and began to front run My guess is something very similar happened this time, right? You don't just go from net exporter to net importer for the hell of it. Something happened. And my guess is the Trump administration, who was obviously prepared for this new environment, started speaking to people that were influential, if you know what I mean. And we've seen a massive shift, from exporting gold to importing gold. Since November, somewhere in the neighborhood of 13 million ounces and 50 million ounces, 13 million ounces of gold and 50 million ounces of silver have moved from the London vaults to the United States vaults.
Ah.
And that's just London. Now you have, Singapore, and you have Brazil, and you have Switzerland, the refineries. You have smaller exchanges around the world where metal has been shifted into the United States. You even have some from Shanghai that is finding its way into the United States through imports. And the conventional wisdom was that it was the threat of Trump tariffs, because many of these contracts that are issued by the commercial banks on COMEX and on the LBMA are what is called rehypothecated or naked. Rehypothecated mean this same contract, if this represents a COMEX contract for 100 ounces, is sold to 20 different players.
Right.
Each one thinking they have the ability to stand for delivery. If all 20 stand for delivery, you know, much like a fractional reserve system, if everyone goes into the bank and says, give me my money, very few will get it. Same thing with Bernie Madoff. It was a great game until everyone said, give me my money. Very few got it. And the same thing is true here. The COMEX and the LBMA are largely fractionally reserved, rehypothecated, and the majority of all the trades are naked, meaning nothing standing behind it. And the example I gave you before using the COMEX, this means I'm not naked. Now, if I'm making that trade with nothing in my hand and going short over here, that's naked. But if I have this long in my warehouse and this short, it's covered. If I had to cover, because if I sell something short on COMEX and you buy that contract and go long, you take the other side of it. Every contract has two parties. I go short, you go long. Well, your option could be, I want my gold, thank you very much. I'm going to stand for delivery. Now, no one ever did that. But this is where the problem comes into play. And all this gold that's been coming from London is beginning to show that. Now, London is what's called a T plus one settlement, right? T plus one. And right now, they are running at a rate of roughly 6 to 8 weeks back. So how does that happen? How can an exchange that has, for example, right now, they have 280 million ounces on paper in gold, but only 36 million available for delivery, or that is called the float. The rest belong to ETFs or the Bank of England or whoever, because it's all held by the Bank of England, right? Safeguarding, and there's 280 million ounces, 36 million available against 380 million ounces in outstanding spot contracts. 380 million. But there's only 279 million there totally, but only 36 million is available. In silver, it's even worse. They have a float of 300 million. There's 800 million available. 300 million is available. 800 million is in the warehouse. Warehouse is in holdings. 500 of that 800 belongs to the ETFs and others. 300 million available. They say we trade 290 million a day, but they admit those numbers are 10 times understated, as they only report the final settlement numbers, according to David Jensen. Therefore, that means they're trading as much as 3 billion ounces a day, 3.5 times annual global mine supply per day. So there's three billion ounces on a 300 million ounce float. And in gold, as you can see, you know, same thing. There's 380 million ounces outstanding, 36 million ounces of a float. Everyone says, give me my gold. We have a problem, Houston. And that's exactly what we've been seeing. Now, they're trying to tell us at the LBMA that, oh, it's a manpower thing. We don't have enough trucks and enough men to move it. The refining issue. And I say, bullshit. That's not how it works. The Bank of England certainly has enough capacity and wherewithal to get more trucks, even if they have to lease every truck in the UK to fill these requests. Why, they could do that, right? So something is very off here. To give you an idea of how big this truly is, you know, I don't think people understand just how big it really is, and it is very, very big. The largest delivery that the COMEX market has ever seen, ever, was in June of 2020 during QE to infinity and the pandemic, and it was 47,132 contracts stood for delivery. Each contract's 100 ounces, so 4,713,200 ounces of gold stood for delivery, a big delivery, largest ever until February this year. The February contract just saw 59,296 contracts stand for delivery. That's 5,929,600 ounces of gold that stood for delivery, the largest by over 12,000 contracts in the history of the COMEX market. We've seen about just under 14 million ounces of silver stand for delivery as well. And when we talk about deposits, you have JP Morgan, who is delivering $4 billion in gold to the COMEX in February, one of the largest shipments ever, top two or three ever. And they have said publicly, Blythe Masters has said this many times, who used to run their trade desk, that they don't buy it for themselves. It's for a customer. Who's got $4 billion to buy gold with? Maybe Warren Buffett, got a lot of money in cash on the sidelines. Maybe it's the federal government, as some people think. Again, at the beginning of this conversation, I said, I don't know the outcome, but what I will tell you, the things I'm seeing, and there's more to talk about here in a moment, is an anomaly. In everything I've ever seen in 35 years, I live on a golf course in Florida. It's 4 feet of snow in my backyard. I've made this analogy of other things before. I have two snowmobiles in my sister's garage back in Minneapolis, where I lived for 50 years, and I wouldn't call her and tell her to send them to me, because I'm going to go for a ride in my backyard knowing they'd be melted by noon. That's exactly the kind of anomaly that we're seeing, not only in deliveries, in shipments into the warehouse, or in the fact that we're now net importers of gold, or the fact that a T plus one exchange is T plus 8 weeks, and people aren't freaking out that that's a default. See, same time, you have lease rates going through the roof. So let's use lease rates as an example.
Yeah.
I'm a jeweler and I need this gold bar in order to make my jewelry. And I'm told, well, dude, there's an 8 week delivery delay. Sorry. Well, what do I do, man? I got orders. I need the gold for my jewelry. What am I going to do? Well, you can lease a bar from, you know, Joe Bank. So I call Joe the bank and I say, I need to lease a bar from you for 60 days. The prevailing lease rates used to be roughly 10 or 20 basis points. They've gone up to over 6%. That doesn't work. So normally at the 10 or 20 basis points, I would lease the bar. I would give it to the manufacturer to make my jewelry. I'd pay the small vig of 10 or 20 basis points. And then when the bar became available that I had purchased, which is supposed to be T plus one in 60 days. Hopefully I get my bar before the LBMA defaults and you know, I'm made whole. So I pay back the lease with the bar, but that's very, very unusual. And it's interesting, before I touch on one other thing, you know, I asked AI, I said, if the LBMA was going to fail, what would we want to look for? Signs to watch for, I said. It said widening divergence between paper and physical gold prices indicating delivery stress. Well, at its peak about 2 weeks ago, the spread between London and the United States, I believe, I want to say, was $82 an ounce. It was $82 an ounce over COMEX premium over London spot. Right. So it's saying if you have a big spread, it's about $25-$30 last time I looked. So it's supposed to just be real close so you don't get that arbitrage, right? That's one of the thoughts. Well, they're all sending it back to take care of this arbitrage. Well, that's could be. I guess it's convincing. I don't believe that's what it is. So the first thing they said is widening divergence between paper and physical gold prices, including delivery, indicating delivery stress. Check. Then it says reports of delayed deliveries or contract settlements. T plus one, no, T plus 8 weeks. Check. Unusual gold lease rate spikes reflecting increased borrowing costs for physical gold. Check. Major disruptions in supply chains, including mining, refining, or transportation. Well, don't have enough trucks. Refining problems because the COMEX uses kilo or 100 ounce. LBMA has 400 ounce, got to send it to Switzerland to refine it. Bullshit. Check. And then you have the banking sector instability affecting LBMA member banks or clearinghouses. That's coming. That's the big one. So four of the five factors that AI said watch out for are flashing bright red. And so, you know, it's interesting. A couple other things worth mentioning, I guess, along the way. You know, the price of gold has moved up for 8 straight weeks, hasn't had a down week in February. And the ETFs, in particular GLD, has seen huge outflows, which to me is counterintuitive, right?
Yeah,
and the conventional wisdom, Andy, would be, well, stronger dollar, rising interest rates, profit taking, Trump trade, NVIDIA, you know. No, none of that's true at all. And in fact, if you look at the prospectus on GLD, you and I, Andy, could never take possession of the metal out of it. None of us could. You have to be like a commercial bank who has the ability to fund a basket or to take a basket, tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars. They can do it. And over the last several weeks, 16 tons record withdrawals have come out of GLD. That's the same thing as share redemptions. People are redeeming their shares and leaving, right? That's what the talking heads say. Or is it? No, it's an inverse share redemption by like players like JP and Goldman who take their shares privately without the visibility we would see on other exchanges like COMEX, and they redeem their shares inward, which decreases the number of shares outstanding, but they pull out the physical metal instead. The wealthy elites are removing physical from the ETFs and to consolidate control over the real assets, right? And it's always bothered me. Let's just real quick mention SLV, and then I'll mention what's bothered me. SLV has a short position on it of about over 950 million ounces. So it's weird. You can short, you can even naked short in most cases. I mean, you always are really, unless you're a bank with metal. You can short SLV and GLD. You borrow the shares and short it. You have to get those shares back in order to deliver them, but down the road, but you can do that. And so in the past few weeks, the cost, the fees to borrow SLV shares has gone from 0.5% to 12% in a few weeks, 24 times. Wow. The number of shares available to borrow have gone from 10 million to 10,000 in just a couple of weeks. That's 99%+ reduction in shares. And you have a $950 million shortfall. You're talking a silver squeeze potential of historic proportions. Now, it's always bothered me that JP Morgan has been able, after paying the largest fine at that point the Justice Department ever handed out to anyone of $920 million for manipulating the metals market, was able to retain custodianship of the world's largest silver trust. And it just seemed counterintuitive to me when you have the fox guarding the hen house.
Right.
HSBC Bank was always a custodian of GLD. But guess who's the custodian of GLD now? That's right. JP Morgan and BlackRock are now the custodians of both SLV and GLD in two vaults that JP Morgan holds, one in London, one in New York. They hold more gold than half the G20 countries. People have asked me, do you think gold will be confiscated again, Andy, like Roosevelt did right there? And I say, no, I think they'll take the ETFs. I've said this on 1,000 podcasts. Because they can have their cake and eat it too. they can look the world in the face and say, well, we didn't do anything. We didn't break laws or infringe civil liberties. The prospectus doesn't allow you to take it unless you are a basket funder. So you can still own physical gold in this country, but then they'd be sitting, instead of going door to door to people who are patriotic, maybe not as patriotic as they were in 1933 in a different way, they're patriotic. They're probably members of the NRA, and they're not going to give up their gold so easily. So to go door to door to those people might not be the wisest endeavor. Instead, you have two funds held by a massive cartel criminal bank, at least in terms of, hey, they paid the largest fine ever for manipulating the metals market. That's a criminal bank, not to mention all of the other fines they've paid for violations, financial violations, in the billions of dollars. And they're the custodian of the world's largest silver trust, and now one of the largest gold trusts in the world. They could come in, close those funds on a Friday night, have a massive stockpile of gold and silver centrally held without going door to door, without risking the backlash of activating eminent domain for physical gold when countries like China are actively incentivizing their citizens to accumulate gold through the Shanghai Gold Exchange. It's one of the reasons we're seeing such massive deliveries off of Shanghai. It's not the West pulling it all off. It's the Chinese people. They're incentivizing their people. Instead of holding money in banks, hold it in physical gold and silver, and they will buy it on Shanghai, which is a cash and carry market. Here's my money. There's your gold. Thank you very much. They're seeing huge deliveries. A few years ago, Alistair McLeod, one of the smartest guys I know, said that the Chinese have as much as 38,000 metric tons of gold, not the 2,500 they tell us. Their numbers are so vastly underreported, it's ridiculous. But they have all of this gold, we're told, and 18,000 by the people, 20 by the state. At least Alistair McLeod says that. They don't report it that way. I mean, they produce 300 to 500 metric tons a year, and have been doing that for 25 years. Their numbers are way understated. But, you know, the point of it being that there's a lot of gold being accumulated around the world, no question about it. And a country like China is at the top of the list. But what we are seeing right now, Andy, is to me very, 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 very different than anything that I could even remotely compare this to. And you have gold as a tier one. The central bank's buying and repatriating it. The United States has become a net importer. The largest deliveries in the history of the COMEX, some of the largest deposits into the COMEX ever. You have London going from T plus one to T plus 8 weeks. You got all this stuff happening. And then you have Judy Shelton, who was the Treasury Secretary, was nominated to be the head of the Federal Reserve in 2016. Don't know where the Treasury Secretary nonsense came from, but she was nominated to be the head of the Fed by Trump. She wasn't confirmed. She was an advisor. And I did an interview with her recently. She said, yeah, we discussed this forever, and we talked about issuing gold-backed treasuries in the previous administration. He's going to do it this time, she says, because who wants to hold our treasuries of any duration? Who wants to hold our treasuries when we've inflated them, we've weaponized them, when gold has doubled the performance of the 10-year treasury for 25 years without counterparty risk? Who wants to hold our treasuries? So Trump and I discussed issuing 50-year treasuries pegged to gold. Part of me feels that all this gold coming back is for this reason, right? That they need to have enough gold. It's not the Fort Knox thing, which I'll touch on in a second. It's not the tariff things. That was the ruse to bring it all home quietly. But I do believe that is what they want to do, to issue treasuries backed by gold. Judy Shelton said to me, Andy, there's a high probability in my mind she'll run the Federal Reserve next year when Powell's tenure is up. At the very least, I wouldn't be surprised to see her on the Board of Governors. But she said he'll issue them July 4th, 2026.
Okay.
The 250th year anniversary of the United States, as a way to establish credibility.
That's huge news, Andy. That is huge.
Yeah. She said to me, look, it is my belief July 4th, they're coming out 2026.
Good. Yeah.
So, you know, I said to her, Judy, this was a month ago, long before they were talking about Fort Knox. I said, why haven't they audited the Fed's gold? And she says, well, it's stupid that they haven't. She said, you know, they always say price is too high. The cost is too high to do it. And logistics are challenging. And she said, you know, we're the United States, for goodness sake, we should spend a few million dollars. We should get this done. And now you see that they will. Hopefully they do a real audit rather than trust the seals that are on there. That there's been some great work. I think it was by Jan Nieuwenhuis, who's talked about investigative journalism and Freedom of Information Act, that says those seals should definitely be questioned because the seals had been broken several times. Anyways, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole. But then I said, do you know that all the central bank gold is held on balance sheets across the globe in what's called the gold revaluation account? You can't make that up. That is the name of it. The central banks, including the United States, hold gold in what is called the gold revaluation account. It's on their balance sheet. In Europe, it's valued at $35 an ounce. In the United States, it's $42.22.
Yeah.
Because when Nixon closed the gold window in 71, in essence, revaluing the price of gold because the markets moved it to $29.50 over the last, 50 plus years. But he revalued it again in 1972, where he moved it from 35 to 38, and then in 73, from 38 to 42.22. That devalues the dollar, that increases the price of gold. It's not without precedent to consider revaluing the price of gold. A lot of people talk about it. And she said, yeah, I did know that. I said, Judy, do you think they'll revalue gold? And not in so many words, but more or less, she said, yes, that's a strong possibility. Now, again, the only other tier one asset in the world, other than treasury bonds, held in the gold revaluation account, the head of the Dutch National Bank, I've been screaming this for 3 years, because for 3 years, the head of the Dutch National Bank said we should revalue our gold on our balance sheet to offset our liabilities on our balance sheet. And now you have members of the German Bundesbank saying the same thing. And Senator Loomis, Cynthia Loomis from Wyoming, who spoke at the Bitcoin meeting in Tennessee a few months ago, when Trump said he was open to forming a strategic Bitcoin account, she said, I'm going to float a bill to revalue the gold held in the gold revaluation account to a level sufficient enough to use some of that funding to buy Bitcoin for the strategic Bitcoin account, which I found very, very interesting. And so this is, again, not without precedent. Now, I'm not saying that they will do this, but it is worth mentioning that you have senators in the United States and heads of central banks advocating for it. It's happened before. It's in the revaluation account. And, you know, even if they marked it to market from 42.22 to 29.50, you're talking about roughly $800 billion going into the Treasury General account, where they could get their balance sheet more in line with reality, help them start working things down, because, our balance sheet is a mess. Now, a lot of people have been talking about revaluing it much higher. Every $4,000 increase in the price of gold would add $1 trillion free and clear to the Treasury General account. So there are guys like James Rickards. I think the number he uses, 24,000, where he takes M1, takes 40% of it, using a 40% gold backing, and then divides it into the gold at Fort Knox. And I think he, or at, held by the Fed on behalf of the Treasury. And he comes up, I think it was 24,000 that he talked about. And there are other numbers that are even higher than that. And that is what it would be if the U.S. government raised it to that price and said, we'll buy it from any government that wants to deliver their gold to us at that rate. That is what it is. And it would very quickly start to fix the balance sheet issues that would allow us then to start to dig our way out to provide more of the gold at a higher level to back Judy Shelton's idea of issuing gold-backed treasuries deliverable in gold at the end of the 50-year duration. These things are becoming a little bit more plausible as you talk about them. And so, you know, how does this all play out? I'm really not sure how it all plays out, but what I can tell you is that in my mind, this is not about Trump tariffs. This is not about shoring up the balance sheets for the Basel III law that basically says that paper gold is now a tier three asset, where only 50% is counted on the balance sheet, but physical gold is the only other tier one asset. I mean, that could be part of it, as could the tariffs, part of it. But to me, this whether they revalue the price of gold much, much higher, which is a possibility, or just bringing it back to help reshore gold, realizing that this is a system now that is moving from promises of treasury debt by a government that is bankrupt in essence. And when I say that, look, I mean, yeah, $36 trillion debt, trillion seconds ago, 31,688 years ago, 200 trillion in unfunded liabilities, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. I can say all that shit, but let's just break it down and make it really, really easy. We take in somewhere between 4.5 and 5 trillion a year in taxes. I don't think we've ever gotten to five, but just under. And he wants to lower taxes, but let's just give him benefit of the doubt and say it's 5 trillion. We owe $28 trillion in 3 years by 2028 in bonds that are coming due, right? We take in 15 trillion over the next 3 years in tax revenue, and yet we owe 28, which doesn't take into account anything we do over the next 3 years. We're already over $800 billion in debt for this year, and it's only February. So how do we continue to finance a debt and incentivize people to take our treasuries when we don't even have enough in tax revenue to cover roughly 50% of what we've already committed to that's coming due in 3 years, let alone what we're doing now and any other funding? It's a problem. And so I think by at least marking it to market and pegging it to treasuries, you would begin to perhaps rekindle some form of demand. And you hear what Elon Musk was saying, put all of the government spending on a blockchain. Well, I have said for 4 years that the only way that anyone will ever drink the Kool-Aid again is to marry a new system between blockchain technology and gold. Now, Judy said to me, I believe they will issue stablecoins, whoever they is, could be Tether, could be USDC, could be Ripple, whoever, third-party entities issuing stablecoins off of the 50-year treasury that would be listed on a blockchain with all the gold behind it. You're now beginning to establish transparency and confidence in a system that is bankrupt of all of that. And this is a situation where this government is broke, we're insolvent, we're in trouble. I don't care if Doge knocks a trillion off the balance sheet, you're still gonna be a trillion plus, if not more, in deficit spending every year. You're never gonna chip away at this growing mountain of debt in a rising interest rate environment. This becomes an existential threat to the country. So there has to be something shocking and unconventional. If you told me that gold would be revalued to 140,000, most people say you're out of your damn mind. But is it that crazy? I mean, Bitcoin's at 100. At 140,000, the $36 trillion debt, in essence, is rendered on par with your assets. Your balance sheet looks perfect. Who's been accumulating all the gold? Well, that's the central banks. Who's it going to benefit? All the central banks. Could it happen? Maybe. I know it sounds crazy, but in essence, I think, especially when you look at the rather shocking things that Trump has done so far, all bets, I think, are open. I don't think you can take anything off the table. I think that's somewhat crazy, but to see it revalued at 24,000, 40,000, whatever it is, adding 10 trillion free and clear to the treasury at 40,000. Is that not something that they would think of? Why not? I just will simply say, I don't know what the hell's going on, but I will tell you that what is happening is an anomaly, maybe the biggest I've seen in 35 years in this industry. So I think, we have to have an open mind about what's going on. And I do know this, it ain't just about Trump tariffs. So to me, nothing else really in this industry even shines a light remotely close in terms of intrigue to what we see happening here. It's what I'm paying attention to more than anything. At the same time, you had the central banks buy almost 1,200 tons of gold in 2024 alone that we know of. Much of the gold that they accumulated was off balance sheet. Like, if China buys it, the PBOC has to report it to the IMF. But if the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, buys it, and they probably have more than the PBOC does, they don't report it. And if proxy banks or commercial banks or sovereign wealth funds buy it on behalf, they don't report it. And I've reported over the last couple of months how China has been flying all around the world buying doré and concentrate directly from miners. Doré is a crudely refined bar. The miner will refine and then send it in for purification or full refining. It's about 40% refined or something like that. Or concentrate is like a sludge byproduct of all of this. They're buying it, paying double what the West will, shipping it home to China for refining. So it disintermediates the marketplace. No one knows what they're buying, doesn't affect the price. There's all sorts of clandestine purchasing right now. No one wants to, you know, lift up their skirt and show how much they're holding and accumulating and purchasing. And why would you if you knew gold was going to be revalued at some point? Why would you if you knew it was going to be pegged to a new system? And why would the most powerful bank in the world in 2019 reclassify gold as the only other tier one asset? And why are all the central banks buying it and repatriating it home? And why is it now coming here? And why is it the largest deliveries and the largest deposits? And I mean, keep on going. And so last piece is, you get Scott Bessent, when he was running a hedge fund in his, before he became the Treasury Secretary, the largest holding of his hedge fund was gold. He just said he wants to monetize the asset side of the balance sheet, which is only $5 trillion, right? The United States government's balance sheet, not the United States, but the government's balance sheet, is $5 trillion, just over. The largest asset on their balance sheet, student debt of $1.4 trillion, $5 trillion, it's roughly 40%. They're not going to monetize that, nor will they monetize the second largest asset, being military bases and guns and airplanes and et cetera. They could monetize land, that's number three, but why not monetize gold, which is held in the gold revaluation account, which is valued at $42.22 an ounce, which every central bank has purchased, which is now tier one, which is flowing into the COMEX at a record no one has ever seen before. When the ETFs are controlled by JP Morgan, I mean, you can see whether or not it happens, they are in position to go bang, 100,000 an ounce, balance sheets pristine, let's go, let's start. And we're going to sell treasuries to the world now, peg it to a blockchain, and they're deliverable in gold. Who wants to own the U.S. Treasury now? And transparency and immutability and all the things that have been lacking, maybe they're about ready to address them. Not saying that's the case, but certainly looks a lot bigger than just Trump tariffs to me.
Okay, so I'm going to say right now, I believe that's what they're doing. You are the second person. What's today? Today is Monday, the 24th of February. You're the second person since Friday. And I interview people all the time that has told me this. It's somebody I really admire. That's what they're doing, Andy. And then you just told it to me differently.
You know, I did a speech in Vancouver at the Resource Investment Conference a month ago, and this was my speech a month ago. So I've been talking about this for a while now, but a lot more of it is coming into focus. And whoever told you this, whatever they told you, like I said at the beginning, not sure how it all plays out, but it ain't just Trump tariffs. How did you hear about it? What did they tell you?
Well, that's what Tom told me. Tom Luongo, guns, goats, and
Tom is awesome. He's a smart dude.
I bet he's saying that
Trump is trying to blow up the Bank of England, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, yes, part of it. And there's a lot going on there. And he comes from a different angle, from really just geopolitical, even though that's you as well. And you're more of the actual metal, and that's where your expertise. But again, you play in the geopolitical realm. But that's exactly what he told me, Andy, they're going to revalue gold.
Yeah. And he's been telling me for a long time, and telling the public that it's the old aristocrats that have been running the world, and Trump and started with the revision from LIBOR to SOFR, and they are quietly, and then they siphon all the gold back from London under false pretenses. And then they expose this massive rehypothecated market. And there's even more supposition this is another angle I'm sure Tom covered. I didn't see this, but I know how Tom thinks because I've talked with him before. There's another angle that saying that the United States government is actually, or the commercial banks who have been wickedly short are actually long now in London.
Yeah.
And it's the European banks that are short and he's going to blow it all up. Could it happen? Do you know what would happen to the gold price if that were the case? But not only that, the systemic nature of everything, because these are commercial banks that are incestuously and systemically connected.
Yeah.
The whole system can go through massive convulsions, to say the least. So I've always found his take on things incredibly interesting. And I think you could add that to the equation and it becomes even more compelling. So somewhere between what he's saying, what I'm saying, and what others are saying, Basel III and Trump tariffs, somewhere in this great circle lies a whole bunch of truth. I don't think it's as simple as just taking advantage of the arbitrage, where, in other words, you have a paper price in London and a delivery price in New York that is massively, outsized from what it normally is as an outlier. I mean, it could be there might be some traders that are taking advantage of that. You buy it in London and sell it in New York and collect that spread. I don't know that that's the case, but,
it's bigger than that. Yes. I think these are just my thoughts, and I've just become convinced. And it's just, you can call it fate, you can call it providential, you can call it luck, whatever. But I just talked to him on Friday and he said pretty much the same thing as you just did, just a little, not a lot, a little bit differently. Very, very interesting. And you name dropped another person, Alistair McLeod. I'm having him on tomorrow. I'm going to ask him the same thing.
Smartest guys I've ever met. He's wicked smart, and I would be interested. I'll have to watch that in his take. This is becoming an issue, and I think it will only get bigger. You have to do something different. And tying gold to the treasury market is not a bad idea. Gold was up 30% last year, and treasuries only paying 4.5%. That spread that makes kind of signaling the fiat game is coming to an end. And if you have a dollar that is losing value at the same time, continuously through inflation, why would anyone want to hold dollar-based treasuries when they can hold gold with no counterparty risk? And I think that's where the idea of, well, if that's the case, let's tie gold to the treasury. We'll have it, we'll post it all on a blockchain. We'll issue stable coins off of it. The government can control the on-ramp and the off-ramp. And to Tom's point, we will really fuck with the Bank of England in doing this. In fact, really destroy things if all of that gold, I mean, the amount of gold. If there's 36 million ounces available, but 380 million ounces outstanding in contracts, what happens? Oh, it's 8 weeks delivery because we don't have enough trucks. Really? Well, let's test that theory. So, these are interesting times, Andy. Truly interesting times, brother. And that's why I said at the beginning, I don't know how it plays out, but it's interesting to say the least. And I suspect it's going to be much more shocking. Maybe not to me and you and your listeners because they're prepared for something like that, but to the average person on the street, I think it will be shocking. And as are many of the things that he's already done, and rightfully so on many levels. So I guess we'll see. And at the same time, as you have the biggest money in the world accumulating gold, you have the public rushing into equities at a level no one has ever seen before. And at the same time, the buy-sell transactions between insiders, in other words, insider and institutional stock buying and selling versus the public, it's massive. For every one purchase, there's, seven or eight sales by the insiders.
Yeah.
And you have Warren Buffett, who's sitting on $334 billion in cash.
Yes.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So yeah, these things are, that the cash that he has is now larger than the market cap of Coca-Cola, T-Mobile, you're talking huge amounts of cash. And it's funny, he's sitting on $286.5 billion of U.S. treasuries, short term. That's the Federal Reserve only holds 195. So he's got more treasuries than the Federal Reserve and more cash in terms of market cap than some of the biggest corporations on the planet.
Right.
What does he know? He knows that he doesn't see value in stocks, and that's where all the public is in seven of them. Yeah. And, you know, so these are very, very frightening times, actually, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of how it all plays out. But don't be surprised to be surprised, you know, over the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I find myself, it's kind of like a prep for this, and yet I'm still surprised, if that makes sense, and terrified.
Yeah.
And happy. It's all twisted, but I just can't believe it. This is happening. So as we speak, it's really.
Well, at least we're not all locked down wearing masks, can't see your friends or family, and get in trouble for having Thanksgiving. And, you know, but yeah, look, desperate times call for desperate measures. This is what happens when you spend 30 years suppressing interest rates and lying about inflation metrics, and it creates huge distortions in asset prices and you know, anomalies in resources and in capital misallocations of these things. And we're beginning to see these things start to come into line, especially in a rising interest rate environment. You mess with Mother Nature, she'll get her pound of flesh in the end. And by holding down interest rates for 30 years, the distortions, in particular in the treasury market and in asset prices, I think are coming to an end. And then in weaponizing the dollar was kind of the beginning of the end for the treasury market, for the U.S. dollar. And so you have to do something substantial to reignite that confidence, I guess. And maybe this is where it begins.
Yeah. Well, Andy, let's end there. Give me a shout out. You don't need any intro or, I guess, extra. People know who you are, but please tell us how, if nobody's ever heard of you, how do they find you? And
the best way to find our company, well, of course, milesfranklin.com. If people would be interested in talking about precious metals, the best way to get our current price sheet, which we really don't publish online for various reasons, but our prices, if they send an email to info@milesfranklin.com, say Andy Millett sent me, and have it just request the price list, you'll find it's as good or better than anyone in North America. No obligation for doing so. Any questions you heard here can be asked, or questions on, you know, precious metals IRAs or anything like that. info@milesfranklin.com. I do have my own YouTube channel, for which you will be invited here very shortly. I'm going to put you on the other side of the camera and talk about all the people you've spoken with and your insight. So that's coming. That's Miles Franklin YouTube channel, little by little. And so it's growing. We started in June, and we're up to 34 or so thousand subscribers, and we're growing. But, you know, I think a guy like you, who has interviewed so many influential people, is probably as qualified to comment on this stuff as anyone. So that's coming. But I really do appreciate coming on your show. You know, I always enjoy seeing you when we run into each other at shows. And I've always said you're one of the good guys. Always got a smile on your face and a very good aura. And after being at this game for 35 years, you can tell who the knuckleheads are pretty quick. I want to thank you for having me on. I love being here and look forward to coming back on again. And we'll get you on the show and pick up where we left off. But as the Chinese curse says, brother, may you live in interesting times. I'm telling you, this is a whole lot more interesting than the mainstream media is portraying it to be.
Absolutely. Thank you for all of that, Andy. I'd love to be on your show. Just tell me when and where, and I'll be on there. And I'll put all of this info in the show notes on both the YouTube channel as well as the Apple and Spotify podcasts.
Sounds good, my man. I wish you a wonderful day, and look forward to chatting soon. Until then, I'll be looking forward.
All right. Take care.
Bye, Andy.